It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're observing the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, better known as the ADA. From parking lots to street corners to access ramps, accommodations for people with disabilities are an everyday part of our lives. However, it wasn't that long ago when these devices were taken into consideration. Joining us for a look at what life was like before passage of the ADA is Associate Dean of Pitt's School of Health and Rehabilitation Sciences, Kate Seelman, and Jeff Parker, who, along with Ms. Seelman, is a member of the City-County Task Force on Disabilities. Kate Seelman, Jeff Parker, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with you, Kate Seelman. Would you tell us about your role in the ADA legislation, in the passing of the Americans with Disabilities Act?
Well, first of all, I'm a person with disabilities. So I've always been very interested in access to communications, especially since I'm very hard of hearing. And I didn't have any of these accommodations going through school all the way through my PhD, almost. And since I was a poor graduate student and hearing aids cost so much, thank heavens for the Office of Vocational Rehab. But in about 1989, I became the policy person at the National Council on Disability, which is the president's policy council. And there are about 13 people that are presidential appointees, and they make recommendations to the president, to the administration, to the departments. So anyway, that was the first. And at that time, the ADA was actually being developed and within the National Council on Disability. And I helped somewhat in that. I was a big cheer on the White House lawn when the president signed the ADA, as were so many of my good friends and colleagues.
When you were a student, and you described being a poor student, meaning you weren't necessarily, that you were a good student, but you didn't have the resources to purchase the aids that you needed. So what did you do to make do and to get through your courses?
I did the same thing I think that I saw kids in Vietnam who were deaf and hard of hearing do. I sat in the front of the class and tried to lip read, which is very, very difficult to do. But I had enough hearing to get by at that point. And then I told my professors I didn't have very much hearing, so sometimes they gave me their notes.
Did sharing your story, how much did that help people to understand the importance of this legislation? And you know, not just you sharing your story, but other people in similar situations sharing their stories to let people know this is what we need. How much did that help?
You really hit on something that's important, both in disability community, in disability studies around the world, in the United States. Narrative is a big thing for us. We tell our stories, and in part because our stories are not a part of the larger research. So first of all, you have to know what we've done and what we've experienced, as you suggested. But narrative is big for us. And people like stories. And people in Congress like stories. They like short stories.
Pittsburgh's ADA coordinator says, quote, "Everything in the ADA is conditional and one size does not fit all," end quote. Taking this into account, how does the ADA stay relevant?
Well, for one thing, it's kind of like a flag of hope for people around the world, and certainly in the United States. There are always issues cropping up around the ADA, but I don't think the ADA will ever be irrelevant. I was reading an article the other day about the relationship between the ADA and Olmstead, which is a big court case decided in relation to people having the right to live in communities. Now, Olmstead and the courts may have been instrumental, but without the ADA, the right to live as everybody else lives, I don't think that we would have gotten very far in equal opportunities, in places to live, in transportation, communication, employment, although we still have a long way to go there.
Jeff Barker, as someone using a wheelchair, how accessible was the city prior to the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act?
Well, it was really different than it is now. I came out here in 1970 to go to the University of Pittsburgh. And right now, everyone assumes on every corner you're going to find a curb cut. But back in the 70s, curb cuts were something very special. They were a very special commodity. You could hardly find them. So just getting from one block to another in the city of Pittsburgh was a challenge. And I had to look for places where curbs were broken or there were driveways. I'd cross in the middle of streets. Even at the University of Pittsburgh, it was a big challenge to get from Hillman Library to the David Lawrence Hall. And I had a fellow at the university that built a ramp for me overnight. But would do stealth ramps at night and put down tar and macadam and create ramps where there weren't any. But just that alone, getting around, there's a big assumption that there's always going to be a curb cut, and there weren't for many, many years. And that's just one of many challenges that Pittsburgh had back when I came out in the 70s.
Did you ever, as you were, you know, getting from block to block, as you described, did you ever wonder to yourself, you know, isn't anybody seeing this? You know, doesn't anybody get that there needs to be, you know, more in terms of accommodations for people like me than apparently anybody around this campus has realized?
Well, it wasn't really obvious, but, you know, you have to think about the 70s. There was a whole different transition in the thought process about people with disabilities. People before that really weren't very well seen. You know, the term shut-in really meant that people didn't get out. There wasn't transportation. There weren't buildings they could get into. So once people were out there on the street, people didn't know how to react to it. It wasn't obvious what had to be done. I mean, I even talk about this, that the mindset in the early 70s was one of the terminologies used back there, and there are lots of different words for disability, but was someone would describe me as a wheelchair patient. Not being in a hospital, not being in an institution, but I am a wheelchair patient. Just to get into a university, you know, you could have the greatest GPA, the greatest SATs, greatest extracurricular activities, but you would have to be interviewed by the doctors at a university to determine if you would be suitable, if you would be able to make it at the university. And I have a great story I tell about that I really worked hard to make sure that I had nothing that could hold me back in getting into college. And as I came out to Pittsburgh, my parents came out with me, and I had my little admission interview at Pitt. And the doctor said to me, I had to be interviewed by them. The doctor said to me, "Now, do you realize that your parents will not be here to take care of you?" And I said to them, "Well, do you realize that I'm coming out to Pittsburgh to be away from my parents?" But it was a different mindset back then.
Right.
And that's why it wouldn't be obvious that somebody needs curb cuts or somebody can't get into this building. But people started becoming aware as people were out there on the street, so to speak.
You're a member of the City-County Task Force on Disabilities. In your opinion, what has been the most significant benefit people with disabilities have acquired that has come out of this task force?
Well, the advantage of the task force is that we, Dr. Seelman, myself, the other members, we've been asked by the county executive and by the mayor to be their advisors on policies and things that happen. So as their advisors, we're able to say, okay, something's coming up now. We want to look at businesses in Oakland, and can we do something to make them more accessible? Or we have the bike lanes in Pittsburgh coming up. Can we make sure that they don't interfere with something that's already very accessible in Pittsburgh? Or we look at the bus rapid transit. We have the ability that we're asked to be advisors and talk about it. So we have the ability to bring things to the table that would usually be pretty difficult to get out there. And so rather than saying it's one thing, it's being in the position to really whatever is happening, and things are always changing and things are always happening, and you have to watch. You have to watch that everything is taken into account. We have the ability to do that.
And what challenges still need to be overcome?
Well, in the city or in general, you know, there's many, many great things about the ADA. But it's legislation and it's policy. And one thing that policy doesn't do is it itself doesn't change attitudes or values. So you always have to be aware to help people embrace diversity. to understand that being different is okay. It's something good. It's not something to be scared of, not something to worry about. And that's kind of the next level we need to go through in everything. And it affects everything. If you think about there's still challenges in employment, well, think about it. Employment, what's more of a one-on-one relationship than you going in and being interviewed by an employer? And if you have somebody that's still a little hesitant, still a little awkward, doesn't understand disability or somebody being different, then that's a challenge there. And you're going to find that with healthcare. You're going to find that with education. You're going to find that with housing. So I think that the big challenge now is to really look at a way to help people embrace diversity and know that being different is good for everybody.
And Kate Seelman, let me go back to you and ask, what challenges do you feel still need to be overcome?
I think that, of course, I agree with Jeff, but in addition, and taking it from academic, more disability studies, as he said, moving away from a medical model of people with disabilities or individuals with disabilities to a more social model is really great. Then you have to think of people in society rather than people who are patients. So that's one. Another is that this is also a social justice matter, and we need to have support for these human rights through certain kinds of programs. For example, at the University of Pittsburgh now, I'm advisor to the first Students for Disability Advocacy Group, and they are held on wheels, literally on wheels, most of them. But some of them are autistic, or some of them are something else. But they themselves are networking around. But as there was a Post-Gazette article about our students, some of them are very smart students. They're graduate students in engineering, for example. And some of them want to pursuing careers in science. And while the National Science Foundation, on the one hand, is interested in presenting and providing them with very prestigious awards, on the other hand, there are ceilings on the amount of money that these students can get from Medicaid. And they absolutely, in order to get up in the morning, they have to have personal attendance. So that's not a choice we want to continue to have our young have to make. And so there are lots of big and little problems. Certainly attitudes are one of the big ones. And Social Security is invaluable. We believe in it, and we know that it's very, very valuable. But there's a lot of lags from, you know, Social Security, 1935, the ADA, 1990. A lot of time there in between for social programs not to have been as much brought up to date as maybe they need to, not only for people with disabilities of a young age, but older people too.
How much would you estimate, and I'll throw this out to both of you, how much would you say that the country has benefited from the ADA when you consider the difficulties that existed for people with disabilities prior to the enactment of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and the fact that so much of this brain power, a lot of it probably went untapped simply because of the lack of access and people, you know, for very understandable reasons, not wanting to deal with the roadblocks and the obstacles that were out there.
Well, it's an enormous amount. It's almost immeasurable because you think about it, before the ADA or the Rehab Act of 1973, the idea was, the assumption was, people aren't working, people aren't having relationships, people aren't having jobs, they're not getting where because their disability was preventing them. But it started looking at it from a whole different angle, that this means that it's something else. Is there some other barrier other than the person themselves? So once somebody realized that the person wasn't the barrier, it's the external environment is the barrier, it just opened up the world for many, many, many millions of people. And it still to this day does it, but it still is a challenge to keep those barriers open too.
I would also say that the federal budget and the state budgets have benefited by deinstitutionalization and bringing people into the community. It is either cost-effective or cost-less, usually, in economic studies.
But people lose sight of that. They have to remember that that's true. That was really obvious in the 90s. It's very obvious in the 90s, but after 20 years, people start forgetting that, no, that there is a value. There's a value, a financial value and an environmental value and a personal social value to people being in the community. And we have to keep that in the forefront.
Joining us for a look at life before passage of the ADA, Associate Dean at Pitt School of Health and Rehabilitation Sciences, Kate Seelman, and Jeff Parker, who along with Ms. Seelman is a member of the City-County Task Force on Disabilities. Thank you, both of you, for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
And thank you.
Thank you very much.
Coming up.
To me, what's really most exciting is to see the people on the street using these technologies or going to the airport or something like that. And you say, wow, that came out of Hurl.
Discover how the Human Engineering Research Laboratories at the University of Pittsburgh are improving the lives of people with disabilities when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.